Data quality is all about making sure that you have data that is fit for purpose, that can be used efficiently in operations within a business, can be accurate and consistent and trustworthy within the analytics, the reports that are used by that organization.
Welcome to the Innovation in Compliance Podcast, part of the Compliance Podcast Network. Join us every week as we talk with industry innovators who are making compliance to help business run more efficiently and at the end of the day, more profitably. Here's your host, Tom Fox.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox, back for another episode. Today, I'm thrilled to have with me Malcolm Hawker. In addition to being a data geek, data expert, compliance aficionado, he's also a fellow podcaster. So we're going to really geek out here. So Malcolm, that incredibly long-winded introduction, first of all, welcome and thank you so much for taking the time to visit with me today.
Thanks, Tom. I'm thrilled to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Malcolm, I'm going to call you an honorary Texan because you lived here for nearly 20 years.
Yes, sir.
Could you tell us a little bit about your professional background?
Oh, my professional background is long and varied, but I'll go to the cliff notes here. I spent the better part of maybe 15 years in product leadership, worked my way up the ranks of the chief product officer at a software startup in Austin, Texas. Have some pretty deep roots when it comes to product management and running and building software as a product. But I made a transition into the IT world and specifically into the data world. I was on a management track for a long time, worked my way up, ran an IT organization at a $2 billion publicly traded company, where I was given the task of solving for a lot of the data-related challenges of that company, including things like data governance and master data management, and have since kind of parlayed my way into a number of different roles, relying on my expertise around data management, master data management governance. Most recently, before joining Prophecy, the company that I work for now, I was an analyst with a company called Gartner, which is, you know, a lot of folks in the IT world rely on insights from Gartner, Gartner Analytics, the beloved Gartner Magic Quadrants to make decisions about what software packages to buy. The last, give or take, 15, 20 years, I've been professional world for almost 30. That sounds crazy to say, but the gray hair is legit. It's not just a highlight. But over those 30 years, give or take, half is really kind of product management, product leadership, building, managing, maintaining, selling products, and the last 15, really, really diving deep into the world of data analytics, governance, and how organizations can become more data-driven.
So you're the only person I've ever met who actually worked at AOL.
That's fantastic. I'm glad you looked that up in the resume. That was a wild ride.
I bet it was. So what's your current role with Prophecy?
My current role is head of data strategy, and that's a little bit of a slightly misleading title in that my job day in and day out is really all about evangelism. And I could have been called the chief evangelist. We just decided that title wasn't a great fit for a lot of different reasons. I'm not much for kind of being a cheerleader, but I am passionate about how companies can leverage data to drive truly exceptional results. But I'm an evangelist. I'm out there selling the value of data, selling the value to organizations of better data management, selling why you should be implementing a data governance program, why you should be implementing master data management software and data quality software and all the other things that we know can make a tangible difference for organizations in the world of digital transformation, digital acceleration. Why does data matter? So I'm out there having conversations every day with CIOs and CDOs when I was a Gartner analyst. I was having those conversations every day. It's my job to lift the tide, the data management tide and the data governance tide, because Prophecy truly believes that if I'm positioned in the market as a trusted advisor, as a trusted consultant, with somebody's been there, done that, gone through the school of hard knocks, knows what works, knows what doesn't work, that if I'm out there sharing those insights, well, then if companies want to better manage their data, if they want to embark on a master data management program or a data governance program, they'll see me as a trusted advisor, and they will consider Prophecy as they move forward in their evaluations of software solutions to solve for those problems. So first and foremost, I'm kind of an advisor. I'm a consultant. I'm taking everything that I learned as a Gartner analyst, and I'm bringing that to LinkedIn and to YouTube and to the CDO Matters podcast and sharing as much information as we can with the hopes that companies up their game from a data perspective because they could really use help.
What is Prophecy's master data management?
Prophecy is purveyor of MDM, Master Data Management Software. MDM is a bit of a loaded acronym because people often think that it means mobile device management. In IT organizations, it's the software that makes sure that you don't do crazy things with your cell phone. But it's Master Data Management, MDM. And Master Data Management solves for what companies typically call the single version of the truth problem. all companies grow naturally. They will acquire other companies. They will develop functional silos within their organizations so that data in one system about customers or products or things or employees or contracts even can tend to naturally look different than the same data would look in some other data. So the common problem that you hear a lot is that companies lack a single version of the truth or single way to look at their customers, because customer data in a CRM system or an ERP system or a case management system would look different. They're all going to look slightly different because those functions tend to look at customers or cases or people slightly differently. A classic example is how sales and marketing looks and considers a customer is often very different than the way a financial system would look at a customer or person. And those differences naturally evolve in an organization where you lack a single version of that customer data because it's sitting all over the place. It's in multiple customer data or product data or employee data or asset data or contract data or case data is sitting all over the place, and you lack a single version of the truth of that, which makes it incredibly hard to deliver accurate insights about the full depth of your relationship with your customers or your patients or your providers or anything else. Makes it hard to operate efficiently within your organization. Anytime you want to do things like issue a contract or send a bill of goods or to manage anything, any other internal operational process, if you don't have single source for truth, if you don't have consistent data, if you don't have accurate data, if you don't have trustworthy data, how do you run a business effectively? So MDM software solves for the single version of the truth problem. That's the high level answer to the question.
What's data quality? How can bad data impact a company negatively?
Good question. There's a lot of different definitions of data quality, but I kind of tend to look at this through some fairly purist lens. Data quality speaks to what at Gartner we would call the fit for purpose of data within a given business process or within a given work. There are some classic ways to measure data quality: the accuracy of data, the completeness of data, the timeliness of data, the uniqueness of data. Those are four ways that you could actually measure data quality. Is it unique? Well, no, I've got two things. I've got four different records from Malcolm Hocker. Which one's the right one? So a lack of uniqueness could be a problem. That's a sign of poor data quality, or a lack of accuracy. Maybe my name is misspelt or my address is misspelt on my customer record. So data quality is all about making sure that you have data that is fit for purpose, that can be used efficiently in operations within a business, can be accurate and consistent and trustworthy within the analytics, the reports that are used by that organization. There's a lot of different ways to kind of measure data quality, but here's where things get a little tricky, is that it can be contextual, meaning what is high quality for one organization of one use case could actually be low quality for another use case. What a compliance expert or an audit expert or a lawyer would expect from a quality perspective could be one thing, but what a marketer would expect for quality could be completely other. So the notion of data quality within a large organization today does vary. Because what is fit for purpose, what is needed to execute, let's just say, to send a piece of email or just to execute on a marketing campaign, the quality needed to do that in an effective way is different than the quality that would be needed to make sure that you're operating within the confines of a regulatory constraint or a law. So quality can vary by use case within an organization. So it does tend to get a little complicated because there's not a one-size-fits-all approach to data quality.
So in terms of data governance, how do you help a company think through the actual governance of data, literally from the tactical level of the data entry clerk all the way up to the board of directors?
Governance must be applied at multiple levels within an organization. It needs to apply roughly across three levels of the organization. At the highest levels, at a C level, it needs to be applied cross-functionally, and it needs to be applied within functional levels. And the policies and procedures of governance is all, in essence, about two things. Really, it's about the definition of policies and procedures related to your data. So who can see the data? When is it accurate, right? How long do we maintain it? Even some of the kind of pure infrastructure rules that would be related to where data is stored in terms of, does it need to stay in this country or that country? So there are a lot of different policies and procedures that a company needs to manage related to data governance. So that's one aspect. And then, of course, the more important thing is the implementation and execution of those policies. One thing to write all this stuff down and to have policies and procedures related to the way that you maintain and manage and govern, which should be done in a way to optimize the value of your data assets within your organization. So that's a key driving force here within governance, is that we don't necessarily do governance for governance's sake. Sometimes we have to because the law requires it, but generally we are doing governance because it enables a company to operate in a more efficient way. So there are three aspects of data governance. There is data governance for revenue enablement, there's data governance for cost savings, and there's data governance for more regulatory and compliance-driven concerns. So all three of those need to be managed across and have a robust set of policies and procedures to do that. Those rules need to be implemented into software systems or into business processes or into other things that people do day in and day out managing data. So it can get rather complex. Ultimately, governance is about those three things: more money, less cost, or being and operating in a compliant way. And ultimately, a chief data officer or some similar role would actually be able to define how governance drives each of those three levers within an organization in a very, very tangible way, meaning money. How much more revenue can we drive by governing data efficiently? How much cost savings and how much risk can we mitigate and how much money is associated?
What's the role of the board of directors in data governance? Or conversely, when you counsel a board, how do you help them think through that role?
There's a lot of confusion in the space now related to kind of ESG and the G in ESG, which I would argue is more corporate governance and speaks to how the company is run. The operating model of the company writ large, kind of corporate governance with a G, and then data governance with, it's still a G, but data governance versus corporate governance. And typically, there's lots of different forms of governance, by the way. There's data governance, there's corporate governance, there's even IT governance. Are we complying with the license agreements that we have written against the software that we've purchased? Do our systems operate in a compliant way? And there's all sorts of different forms of governance. But at a board level, typically we're talking about corporate governance and less so about data governance, but a board can certainly be informing the policies and procedures at more of a functional level when it comes to data governance, particularly when things go sideways. If data breaches happen, for example, and all of a sudden there's a bunch of PII, personally identifiable information about your customers or your stakeholders or whoever floating around on the internet, obviously a board is going to get involved and say, hey, listen, IT, you need to go fix this, and this is never going to happen again. So I would say kind of day in and day out, most of the governance the board is focusing on is more at a corporate governance level and less so at a functional level or an operating level, which is typically the kind of the domain of the C-suite, the CDO and the CIO typically, but not exclusively. Again, generally, the board will get involved if things kind of go sideways, and that's a bad sign. If you've got your board involved in driving data governance decisions, then something has probably gone wrong because ultimately you want them a little more focused on corporate governance and corporate strategy. You want some of the kind of functional things that happen at more of a data governance level.
I've had more than one data protection / data privacy expert tell me that they think 2023 and beyond will move from the breach / data protection to data privacy as a key issue. Certainly in Europe, data privacy is a key issue for U.S. companies doing business globally. That makes it a key issue, whether or not we can get anything passed here in the United States. But the CCPA or CCCP in California and some states, or where do you see data privacy as an issue within the overall data quality that we've been talking about?
It's a huge issue, and I need to disclaim. Safe harbor statement here for your podcast guest. I'm not a data privacy expert at all. So take this with a bit of a grain of salt. Data privacy tends to be kind of its own unique swim lane within the data governance world. We're typically, data geeks like me are typically deferring to CISOs, chief information security officers, or privacy officers who are driving and maintaining those policies. So yes, data governance includes policies that relate to data privacy, but we will typically just defer to those experts because it starts to bleed into kind of more regulatory constraints and other legal areas where non-legal folks or compliance folks like myself will tend to kind of shy away from. But that said, I mean, it's incredibly important. Data privacy is an incredibly important aspect of data governance. You cannot do data governance effectively, certainly without it. You have to have robust policies and procedures there. I see a world evolving where in the future, where there, I think there could be slowly here in the next 3 to 5 years, a bit of a sea change where privacy stops being this reactionary, entirely compliance and entirely regulatorily driven enterprise, which it is today. And that makes sense. It's a very kind of defensive posture, as it were. I see things from a privacy perspective shifting. Now, whether this is, we can talk about some of the enabling technologies here. I think the blockchain will play a role and a few other technologies will play a role. But where privacy, I think, where we could see a sea change shifting more towards what kind of people that are espousing this Web3 world. It's poorly defined today. Everybody's got their own definition for it. But where we do make this shift towards more kind of individual ownership and individual determination over how your data is used, where you could have, in theory, using some of the new technologies like blockchain and others to have more domain over your individual data, where you could be choosing to expose your data to this healthcare provider or that healthcare provider, or where you, there is some form of, I don't want to say a centralized registry because that would go against the grain of blockchain itself, but where there is some sort of virtualized registry where you are able to manage your own data and have control of your own data and have control how others are using it, which would allow for a pivot away from kind of this purely kind of defense driven, regulatory driven approach to privacy and data management within the corporate world to one where it is more individually driven. And I see this kind of slowly happening. I think we're a long way from that, but there is some promise. There is some promise about kind of making this shift.
You mentioned ESG.
Yeah.
And I see data, and most importantly, data governance as a key component of ESG, really the G, but also in the E and S. And
yep.
I was wondering what your thoughts are on the role of data governance in a corporate ESG program.
This could be a separate 2 to 3 hour conversation that I would happily have. Let's say coming out of 2019, going into 2020, before all of the pandemic changed the dynamic of so many things in our world, I really thought that ESG was going to take off like a rocket ship in the data world. And I think the pandemic really kind of set that back a little bit. I think some of the things that are happening from kind of an energy security perspective, particularly energy security in Europe, have set back ESG initiatives just a little bit, particularly the E-centric of the ESG. It's just because I think pragmatism and access to energy sources have really kind of trumped a lot of companies doubling and tripling down on ESG. It certainly hasn't gone anywhere and it's not going anywhere. And I think that this year, particularly 2024, but I do think that this year there will be renewed focus on ESG. In the data world, there's a lot of different ways to look at this. One of the things that I'm attracted to, there are hundreds of ways to look at how data governance and better data management ties into ESG, but one of the ways that I'm intrigued by really kind of speaks to data retention and data archival. We know that the overwhelming majority depends on the data and it depends on the survey. There's been a lot of different surveys taken that we know that anywhere upwards of 50 to 80% of data is dark, meaning it just sits there and it will be hoarded. The word I use is hoarded. So data just gets hoarded. IT people like me are horrible data hoarders because we think there's a rainy day. There's got to be a rainy day. The cost to store this stuff is pretty low, and it's been coming down. Thank you, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, and the cloud providers. You can just stuff data up in the cloud now. You don't even have to manage a data center. You can just move it all up into the cloud, and that's created even more data hoarding. And IT people tend to be incredibly conservative because they'd rather have the data there in the event that the CEO or CIO or CDO or CFO asks for that one report one day. The worst thing that an IT leader can say is, I can't give you that. The best thing that they could say, or the perceived best thing that they can say, is, well, I have the data, let me create the report. So that creates a lot of data hoarding, and a lot of data is sitting out there just collecting dust. And it depends, again, on who you're asking. 50 to 80% is considered just fallow, dark, sitting out there. We also know that data centers are massive energy consumers. There's a lot of different metrics out there, but I read a report recently that said that data centers consume and create more CO2, create more greenhouse gases than the airline industry. So think about that. If you've got a lot of data sitting in these data centers that are just sitting there collecting dust, it's negatively impacting our environment in a material way that could be on par with the commercial airline industry. We're not talking about this. I find this incredibly intriguing. It's like poor data governance, which is poor archival, poor retention, poor access policies, and inability of data leaders to link business outcomes, business priorities, ROI to data. So they just go and hoard it, rainy day fund all the time, and it's negatively impacting the environment. So from an ESG perspective, I actually think that sometime, maybe not 2023, maybe 2024, that CIOs and CDOs will increasingly be given ESG targets as a part of their mandate to say, listen, you need to reduce your carbon footprint through your excessive data hoarding. That's just one way that these worlds could come together. And there's many.
Down the road, I used to say 2025, but now I say 2030, since it's only 2 years away. And then I add the parenthetical, as we move to mid-century in 2030, where do you see the issue of data quality, data governance, and your passion around data, it will only become more important and more ubiquitous.
We live in this world of, for anybody who's been in the corporate world a long time, we knows that we live in this world of pendulums. And things swing on these pendulums. And every now and then, IT people will get distracted. They'll get distracted by the new shiny thing. 15 years ago, it was big data. Right now, a lot of it has to do with AI and ML and data science and ChatGPT and all these new applications of data. But there's always these distractions. And I would argue that those are largely, of course, they're transformational. Don't get me wrong. AI, ML, these things are transformational. How we store data is transformational. Being able to store more and more data is certainly transformational. You're able to leverage it better. But my point here is that from a governance perspective, the meat and potatoes, the foundation of data quality, master data management, all the things that go into creating accurate, consistent, trustworthy, fit-for-purpose data, those things never go away. So wherever the pendulum swings, whether it's AI, ML, big data, ESG, blockchain, metaverse, wherever the pendulum swings, the house that you are living in is built on a foundation of data. And if you can't trust it, you can't make it fit for purpose, you can't make decisions on it, you can't share it, you can't operationalize it, well, then it really doesn't matter where the pendulum is. So we saw this with big data. IT people were out there saying, hey, just cut me a check. We'll go buy Hadoop and it'll solve all of our problems. And it never solved any of the problems because if you couldn't trust the reports before Hadoop, you couldn't trust the reports after Hadoop. The same is true with any of these other kind of trends within data management that we're talking about or larger macro forces in the economy or the world writ large. So the foundation is accurate, fit for purpose, trustworthy, consistent data. That's the foundation. It's not going anywhere. It's only becoming more and more important because we've got more data than ever before. Yes, that sounds trite. It sounds trivial, but it's absolutely true. We are being overwhelmed with the amount of data that we've got. And having that core foundation is the metaphor here is being able to hit the gas pedal on your car. I've gone from a house to a car. Sorry, I'm prone to mixing a lot of metaphors here. But if you're in the car and you hit the gas pedal, if you don't have that foundation, if you can't trust the data, if you don't know where the data is, if you hit the gas pedal, the car isn't going to respond. Or maybe it drives itself off a cliff or you don't quite know where it's going, but you've got to have the foundation in place. And if you want to digitally transform, want to digitally accelerate, if you want to operate in a compliant and regulatorily friendly way, well, then you have to be able to trust your data foundation. And that's where MDM and that's where data quality come into play.
So as I mentioned in the introduction to this podcast, you are also a podcaster. I'd like to turn to your podcast, CDO Matters. Can I start with why you started it and what you're getting out of it?
So why I started it was because what I was seeing online, I'll just say loosely online, whether that's YouTube or whether that is LinkedIn or whether that is blog posts or any other channel where information related to what I would loosely call best practices, where information about how to become more data-driven, how to implement a data-driven culture. What I was seeing was a lot of the same old, same old, same old. I saw this at Gartner. So I was a Gartner analyst. I talked to CDOs and CIOs all day, every day. And they would call me up and say, Malcolm, we've got a problem with A, B, or C. What do we need to do? And I would say, here's what you should do. Here's what the best practices tell us. We know this stuff works. We've got research that tells us this stuff works. Share these insights and they'd be shared. You'd see the same insights on LinkedIn. You'd see the same insights everywhere else where these things are being shared. And then what we saw is the companies just weren't doing them. they weren't doing them. And I saw this at Gartner. It's like, okay, wait a minute. Is the problem me or is the problem the message or is the problem the medium? And I landed on all of them. there was a certain amount of introspection there about, okay, am I delivering the message the right way? Am I compelling enough or am I, you know, and all sorts of other things. But the medium was a big part of it, I believe, which is, you know what, we need to break away from kind of the old tried and true, the kind of the old legacy ways of doing things and imparting knowledge and sharing wisdom, because where the world is going with the younger generation and how business leaders inform themselves is changing. Business leaders before it used to go buy a report from Dun & Bradstreet, or I'd go buy a report or analyst insight from Gartner. It was really, really expensive. That's changing. Now, modern, younger business leaders are turning to LinkedIn. They're turning to YouTube. They're turning to podcasts for these types of insights. So I need to be where the business leaders are. I need to be Canadian. So I like to talk about hockey. Wayne Gretzky would say, where's the puck going? That's why he was good at hockey, because he knew where the puck was going, not where it is. Where's the puck going? Well, Puck is going in my world. It includes podcasts, it includes blogs, it includes all sorts of other things that historically have not been leveraged to share best practices. So that's why I launched CDO Matter.
Unfortunately, we are near the end of our time for this episode, Malcolm, but I do have one special bonus question.
Oh,
so I mentioned you are the only person I have ever interviewed who worked at AOL.
10 years.
You worked at AOL in the 90s.
It was the 90s.
When I assume it was the Wild West. Tell us a little bit about that.
It was absolutely the Wild West. So I started working for AOL in 1995. AOL had just shy of 1 million subscribers. And by the time I left in 2005, after a decade there, they had over 40 million. They had bought Time Warner. And that was just crazy. It was the internet boom. So all of the craziness of these startups in Silicon Valley and everything, I was kind of wound up in there. Yeah, AOL was based on the East Coast, out of DC. But we had vision into that. We bought a browser company and we saw what was going on in Silicon Valley. So that whole thing was a wild ride. And we were figuring out things literally by the seat of our pants, particularly early on. And we started to hire a bunch of kind of ex-traditional media people, like ex-newspaper and ex-TV people. And we bought Time Warner. Things kind of changed. But for the first 5 years, it was this trial by fire experimentation. We were being agile before there was even agile. I don't think there was a word for what we were doing. It was just trying to move incredibly fast. And that has woven its way into my DNA. So my first 5 years at a real grown-up company and a real grown-up job were within AOL, where we were wearing multiple hats, doing many things, being agile, throwing tons and tons of spaghetti at the fridge to see what would stick. And some of it did, most of it didn't. But when it did, it was a huge success. And then we would move on and we'd do it again and we'd do it again. And that kind of moves fast, failing, experimentation, willing to be open to new ideas, innovating, that kind of got woven into how I operate. I'm so thankful for that. And it was a great place to work, great relationships, great company, great time. And I'm just so eternally grateful that I had the opportunity to do it. It was a lot of fun.
Well, Malcolm, unfortunately, now we are at the end of our time. But before we leave, I wanted to ask you if our listeners wanted any more information on yourself, Prophecy, any of the topics we've touched on, or where to find your podcast. What are the places they could go?
Fantastic. Let's start with the end. So the podcast is available through all of the major podcast providers, Spotify, Google, Apple. Check out CDO Matters. We're just shy of our 20th episode now, depending on when this actually publishes. So we'd certainly welcome you to check that out. I'm available on LinkedIn. To my knowledge, there are only 3 Malcolm Hawkers in the world. At the Master Data Challenge, if you spell my name correctly, I think there's only 3 of us. But please connect with me on LinkedIn. I am an open book. I will happily share insights about what works and what doesn't work from a data management, data quality, and DM perspective. Happy to share those insights. Lastly, prophecy.com, prophecie.com. We have a ton of resources, free resources, about all the things that I was just talking about how to become more data-driven, about how to build a business case for NPM, how to launch an NPM program, a data governance framework, on and on and on. If you're a CIO, CDO, or data management expert looking for insights, prophecy.com. But first, check me out on LinkedIn. Happy to help however I can.
Well, Malcolm, I judge a podcast success on 2 things. Number 1, how much did I learn? And number 2, how much fun did I have? You hit 11 on both.
Woo-hoo!
I hope we can continue this conversation.
That would be wonderful, Tom. Thank you so much. It's been my privilege to be here today. Thank you.
If you want to stay up to date on the latest innovations in compliance and help your business run more efficiently, subscribe to this podcast and help spread the word by leaving a review.